Welcome to the Dojo, the podcast where we turn marketing news into marketing tasks. We'll take three stories and turn them into tasks that will improve your marketing by the end of today. And that's a guarantee. This week, we're not going to be joined by a guest, but we are going to be pulling some thoughts and a story from my good self. At least that's what I hear. How are we all doing this week? Awesome. Okay. Fantastic. All right, Tim, tell me, what's your headline for the week?
Some new Google search updates. Nothing to do with AI in the search results, but these are big. 40% of spam targeted. Some of the biggest Google search updates that I can remember seeing, and a lot of panic being caused in the SEO community.
Yay, we love panic. Jess, what's your headline for this week?
So my headline for this week is that Dove is tackling the Sephora 10-year-old problem, where 10-year-old kids are getting addicted to buying skincare, anti-aging, all that kind of stuff. But are they tackling it in the right way? We shall see. We shall see.
Interesting. I've never heard about that. No, I want to know more. Well, my story for this week is going to be about the slow progress on women leaders or women in leadership positions. But Jess, I really got to know more. Tell me, what's that
about?
Yeah,
definitely. Yeah, so I spend quite a lot of time in the YouTube space, and I'd seen quite a lot of commentary YouTubers talking about this trend of 10-year-olds in Sephora. So for those who don't know, Sephora is a department store in the US. They sell a lot of makeup, and a lot of Sephora employees were coming on TikTok and other places saying, wherever all these children come from, they're coming in and they're buying, you know, £300 worth of anti-aging products or skincare products aren't necessarily suitable for them. But also, because they're 10, they're making potions out of the testers, and they're basically causing a lot of chaos, and they don't really have those social skills to ask questions appropriately or really know what they want. There's also been situations of parents getting to the till with the kids and having not looked at the prices and seeing that this kid's totaled up like 300 quid's worth of skincare products. And obviously there was a big conversation online of how unfortunate it is that young people, as young as 10, are feeling like they need to have anti-aging products, because what these products can do, they're actually going to be so harsh on these children's skin that they're going to cause way more problems than these kids think they are solving. So Dove, who is a beauty brand, has started a campaign called hashtag the face of 10. Now, Dove in the past few years has been quite like a body positivity brand and kind of been pushing that they have really diverse models. Like, I know their past hasn't been great and they've made some really poor advertising decisions in the past, but it seems like they've kind of repositioned themselves and they've decided that this is their North Star, right? They really care about this diversity. So they've started this campaign called The Face of 10, which is to sort of re-educate. Now, this is where it gets a bit murky. Re-educate parents, maybe kids, about why they don't need to be using these products, right? And the reason why I say it's a bit murky is that kids are picking up these skin routines from TikTok, and they're using influencers like Drew Barrymore and people who feel a little bit older to sort of, it seems like they're trying to connect with parents, but my strategy here would have been to try and connect with the kids and sort of educate them. And I also noticed in a lot of the comments on these videos, there's kids saying, you know, well, actually I'm really young and I have acne. Cause I think the even though the campaign's called Face of 10, the data that Dove has found has said like a certain amount of kids between 10 and 17 are conscious about how their skin looks. Now, the difference between a 10-year-old and a 17-year-old is quite vast. And I know I had acne from about the age of 8. So I had acne from like 8 to 28, like, you know, so, you know, and I still get it now. So there's kids in the comments saying, well, actually, I need a bit of skincare for my acne. Is that a problem? You know, should I not be washing my face at all? And it's sort of bringing this new conversation. And there's kind of another thing as well of the influencers that are taking part in this campaign. You know, they're doing things like sticking stickers to their faces and saying this is what 10-year-old skin should look like. And I think thinking of the audience they're trying to target, if it's parents, then I get it, because they're kind of saying, oh, you know, this is what your kid's skin should look like. But if they're trying to target 10-year-olds, the same 10-year-olds who are trying to create a 5-step skin routine are not going to be the 10-year-olds who think sticking stickers and paint on your face is fun. They are past that. Maybe they're like, you know, I have three younger sisters, and the youngest one feels way beyond her years because she has three older sisters, right? So she's picking up things from us and interests from us that we wouldn't have had at that age because we didn't have those people above us who are into that stuff, if that makes sense. So I think the campaign is from a really wonderful place. And I think they were like, right, this problem stemming from TikTok. Let's connect with people on TikTok. You know, we're a skincare brand, so this will get eyes on us. And it's a great PR campaign. But I think the audience is a little bit muddled. I think they've decided we want to target parents to do this re-education thing. But the videos, a lot of the videos feel like they're for trying to be aimed at kids, but they're a little bit like, hello fellow kids, do you like putting stickers on your face? Like, it doesn't, I'm sort of not sure who the audience is, and that's after watching quite a few of the influencer videos. But yeah, very, very interesting campaign. Like I said, feel like really fantastic, coming from a really great place. I'm really, really tuned in to a hot topic in the skincare industry, but also I feel like maybe it's falling a little bit flat. I'd love to know what you two think.
I don't know, I see this as, call me quite cynical, but I see Dove piggybacking on momentum somewhere that they can sort of hijack the story a little bit. And, you know, I don't have anything against this. This is kind of what marketers do. But just watching one of the TikToks now, the basic message is that 10-year-olds shouldn't be wearing anti-aging. They should be cleaning their face and using a light moisturizer and maybe some SPF, though. Oh, how convenient. Who sells those then, Dove? So I kind of see it as, hey, there's this thing going on and we can stand in front of a parade. Very few people are going to argue against 10-year-olds like not using anti-aging. So Dove has, I think, correctly identified another trend that they can jump on. I don't know. I think the Drew Barrymore piece is really interesting. She's clearly targeted at the parents, isn't she? That's I guess that's a bit of a flag to show that this is a parent-led campaign, which makes sense because 10-year-olds don't have a huge amount of spending power, I'd imagine, for skincare products. I don't know.
Yeah. I definitely agree with that. But what I was finding on the videos is so many young people are commenting on them. So it seems like they are trying to pick influencers who have a younger audience, but are sending a message to the parents. Because a lot of them, they're like, a lot of 10-year-olds, not like, they're not saying like kids like you, you know, they're addressing, they're almost talking about it in a more abstract way. So yeah, it's very interesting.
What's leading the 10-year-olds into Sephora in the first place to build these routines? Is this TikTok?
Yeah, it's TikTok and influencers and things like that, where they're seeing people who have these wild skincare routines and they're buying these products. This is a mild tangent, but I thought it might be quite interesting. One of the brands, I can't remember their name, they sell something called Bum Bum Cream. That's the only reason why I can remember them. But one of their products that's really popular, people were finding that spiders were chasing them when they were wearing it. And when people broke, they'd be wearing this cream and spiders would just come. And they were like, we don't understand what's happening. It turns out there was like spider pheromones in the cream. there was two chemicals that make up spider pheromones. But that's just another thing that sort of grew to popularity on a platform. And then people on the same platform were like, hang on, this is weird. And then the same platform was like said, don't buy this product. Which we see a lot on social media like TikTok. But yeah, I just thought I'd share that because it's totally ridiculous. Dale, what's your thoughts on this story, if you have any?
Yeah, I do wonder whether it is a case of Dove trying to piggyback on the back of something. I almost wonder whether it's either an internal thing or an agency thing where the agency has said, you know what, there's an opportunity here, we can jump on it. Or somebody internally said there's an opportunity here, we can jump on it. And they've not really spent long enough discussing how do we actually get the very best out of this and strategizing it better to say, okay, if we are going to go into TikTok, let's do it in this way. And if we want to reach the adults, we've got to do it in this way. So I don't know, maybe there are multiple campaigns running through different channels at the same time. But it certainly looks on the evidence of the TikTok content that it's just that they're putting some content in the wrong places. And I do wonder whether there's a bigger opportunity for Dove to actually look at the product development opportunity in this. Like, okay, they want to sell some of their products, but could they be looking at like starting their very first like child range, like reasonable and well-researched and suitable, but you know, some, like making sure they've got the right products for that market with the right marketing, and you can have a TikTok account specifically for that audience rather than it being a general one, and you can provide that kind of informational stuff and you know, have a product at the end. Super not keen, because it is for kids that you would want to develop and and try and pitch a product for sale directly to kids. They're not a toy company or anything like that. But yeah, it just seems like maybe there should have been a longer time spent on checking, you know, risks, concerns, any red flags popping up, and then have we actually picked the right content for the right channels?
It's tough, isn't it? Because if Dove does want to sell moisturizer to parents to buy for the kids, you can't really just say, hey, your kids are sweaty and dirty, which they mostly are, buy this. Because then it's like, oh, you're trying to sell cosmetics. So I think any way that they try and sell these products to kids is going to raise some concerns. So if they, like the TikToks I've seen are super low key, it's, you know, some doctor in a very doctory setting saying, you know, if you do want to look after young skin, then, you know, cleansing and moisturizer and SPF are the ways to do it. But, you know, you don't need to go for anti-aging. And it's very subtle messaging, which I think it has to be, which might be why it's quite, I guess, confused, because they can't be seen to overtly target these this age group. It's a really interesting one. Would you be bringing out the Dove preteen range then, Dale?
Yeah, quite possibly, but I've got a question for Jess, which is about the video that you've linked, and we'll get that linked in the show notes and elsewhere where this is going out. Do you think that video would have performed differently, better, worse, if the same video was published on Instagram instead? So my instinct is, like, thought was, okay, that maybe perhaps a better place for it would have been Instagram, because I know a lot of parents use it, as they do with TikTok. But I don't know, something, I'm curious, do you think it would have performed better there? That would have been the better place for it to go out? Because I don't know if it's necessarily the best place for it, TikTok? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Like I said, I feel like what kind of happened is they went, this trend is originating on TikTok, let's combat it on TikTok, without sort of thinking about who's actually consuming the content. Mm. Because I don't think, if you compare that video, that sciencey one, but I think the sciencey one is meant to be like the pillar piece of content that the other videos direct to, because a lot of them were saying, like, hey, if you head over to Dove's TikTok, you can see their video about it, right? So I think I feel like it should have been a more parent-led campaign, and maybe a platform like Instagram would have been better, or maybe, you know, connecting with them in different ways, like via a newsletter, or I mean, they've done digital PR with it, because that story was popping up everywhere. When I was kind of trying to find like the original source of it, it just seemed like it was popping up everywhere, and it was on PR Newswire and stuff. So I suppose that's one way that they're potentially connecting with parents and then driving through traffic to the TikToks. But like I said, the TikToks themselves just feel a little bit lost in terms of who they're trying to target. Yeah. And I do wonder if, you know, the younger audience who they're trying to target would see that and think that's really babyish. I'm not sticking stickers on my face. I don't know. I watch The Apprentice quite a bit, and nearly every time they go and talk to like these eight-year-olds always go, that's really babyish and I don't like it. So it kind of gave me similar vibes here.
Yeah, it's really curious. I wonder whether this is, as Tim has said, a reactive campaign. They're just trying to get the very best out of it and use it as an opportunity to kind of, one, it matches with their body positivity positioning, or whether it is part of a large campaign. Like, is this something that they've planned into the whole year? Like, in Q2, we're going to hop onto, like, we know that we're going to tackle this subject. Or is it literally, have you seen what's blowing up? Let's have a meeting in like tomorrow. Cool. What can we do in the next, like, you know, couple of weeks and get that out, you know, out quickly? So be really curious to know more about that one.
Yeah, I think it's reactive to me, but yeah, anyway, enough about my story. Who is next?
Yeah, let's hear your story for this week, Tim. I you know, a bit nervous, you're talking algorithm updates.
Yes, so some big updates from Google announced on March the 5th. Huge volatility in the search results pages on the 9th of March, which I think was the Saturday. There's two areas that Google are focusing here. Firstly, improved quality rating through a core update. So this is like a normal search ranking algorithm update. And then they've also got some new spam policies and manual actions. So these are, I can't remember the last time we heard about new manual actions being rolled out, but Explosion Ninja started in the sort of just before Panda and Penguin, and manual actions were all the rage there. Manual actions are proper penalties where someone from Google's team puts a tag on your site, which in some cases can actually de-index the entire website, meaning your organic traffic drops to zero. So we've got Yeah, a couple of things here. They're actually distinct updates, but they're rolling out at the same time. So starting with the improved quality rating then. So if you've seen our video on YouTube about Google's sort of secret SEO Bible, this quality rater guidelines document, how Google's system works is they have tens of thousands of these search quality raters. And these are humans that go and evaluate websites according to Google's documentation of what is considered a quality website. And all of this data is collected. And then every so often they combine the data and the learnings from these manual tests into their core algorithm updates as a way of fine tuning their search algorithm. So this is one of those events where they've taken all of this data about from the search quality raters and built it into their core algorithms. Google predicts that the changes that they're making here will reduce low quality unoriginal content in SERPs by 40%. So this is quite a big number. It's not saying that 40% of SERPs are going to be impacted or 40% of websites are going to be impacted, but they are definitely targeting a lower quality content here. The spam updates also in a similar sort of vein. Now, with the spam updates, they don't mention AI content specifically. They say, I'm going to quote this so I don't get it wrong, "We've long had a policy against using automation to generate low quality or unoriginal content at scale. Today, scaled content creation methods are more sophisticated, and whether content is created purely through automation isn't always as clear." So they're saying that they're going to strengthen their policy to focus on this abusive behavior. So I don't know about you, but I hear like automation, generate content at scale, and think, you know, these Shopify plugins where you can just hook it up to GPT-4 and it fills out all your product descriptions for you. Or, you know, there are obviously a whole bunch of sites on Twitter that have been hammered by these penalties, these manual actions, where it's clearly just they've set up some sort of macro which basically produces almost unlimited content using ChatGPT or equivalent. There's these sites that are just full of all sorts of topics. You know, how much does Ryan Reynolds weigh? Might be like one entire page. It's all generative AI. It's trash. So there's loads of this trash that's being, pulled out or de-indexed completely by Google. So I think there's a big question mark over the future of that sort of programmatic SEO. And this type of programmatic or scaled automated SEO has really taken off. It's captured a lot of people's attention. The possibilities are massive using tools like ChatGPT, but this is Google's response to it. And I think it's really important because there is a huge amount of trash. Like back in the day when you're using article spinners, you could make a few articles fairly quickly, but you know, today the power of things like GPT-4, the speed and the cost of massive content production, it makes it so much easier, makes the amount of this content that's proliferating online. There's another update about parasite SEO. So it doesn't sound particularly white hat given the name, and it's not. So this is the practice of, you know, finding some forum site on a high authority domain and publishing your content on it. Or, you know, Forbes has a sort of, oh, I might get in trouble for this. Forbes has a sort of a backdoor business model of allowing people to pay to publish their information, even if it's completely unrelated to their sort of the core of what Forbes is about. And Google has given 2 months notice, basically. Here's the policy. If you are publishing loads of content that's not really relevant to the core of your site in order to influence rankings, you got 2 months until we're going to start dishing out some penalties. So I see that as a bit of time for sites like that. I'm not saying Forbes is doing this. Well, I am. But sites like that to look at their policies and decide whether or not they're going to make a change. There's also some stuff about expired domain abuse. But this spam stuff is manual action. So this is Google staffers going through, flagging your site as bad news, you being de-indexed, and then having to fight your way through. So it's pretty big. It shouldn't impact most websites that are playing by the book. But this is just a little nudge for those of us who are maybe thinking, oh, maybe we can try some massive content automation using ChatGPT. Google might retroactively punish that sort of decision. Stay safe, peeps.
Yeah, I have quite a few thoughts on this. I watched a video recently where somebody was talking about it and they kept being like, oh, well, what if the local plumbing company wants to make content at scale and they're going to get punished and they're a small business? And I think what we mean by content at scale is like hundreds and hundreds of blogs being uploaded that are just trash. Google does not have any problem with you using an AI tool to help you write a blog. That is not the problem. The problem is when that plumbing website has 10,000 articles that are just not really relevant to their business at all. They may include some stuff related to plumbing, but they're very repetitive. They're not really useful. They might be related to plums instead of plumbing. They haven't been sort of spell checked. Like, we've had situations where, you know, if you run ChatGPT enough times, it just starts like reciting sonnets to you. Like, it literally just goes a bit unhinged. And Google's trying to avoid people just running stuff through ChatGPT to the point that they've got like absolute drivel on their website. And if you follow our channel at all, then I don't think you would even be doing that kind of work. So I just don't want people to go panicking. And I know the manual action thing, people get so paranoid about this, and you always see people go, oh, I'm going to get a manual action because I don't use Google Ads. No, that's not true. That's not how this works. Like, Google isn't just trying to, like, they're not going to punish you for not using Google Ads, because then you're never going to use Google Ads and it'll just be ridiculous. So stay away from the fear mongering and silliness that comes with announcements like this. And remember that it's just, if you misbehave and you muck about and you try and not just like, we all try and game the system a little bit with SEO, right? But what we mean by game the system here is people who are just uploading thousands of pages of content in the hopes they get some traffic. Like, that's just not reasonable, you know? So, yeah.
I would say, I'll pick up on one thing you mentioned there, which is about a plumbing website adding a whole bunch of pages and that they will be about, you know, unrelated subjects. I think people are using AI in various forms to scale their websites and create more and more pages. And you can do that with it being strictly about plumbing. But I don't know whether a plumber in Hastings necessarily needs hundreds of pages about plumbing and the various different things. I think you just need a core set of pages that service the people that are close to you. Or if you're a national plumbing company, you probably need more pages. You wouldn't need a larger scale, but there's a limit to how much you need. There's probably better places for you to spend your money in terms of developing your SEO. Your SEO could be spent offsite, or, you know, making the pages you already have more useful for the people that you're trying to service, rather than adding page after page after page after page. Like, if you add some websites, like even HubSpot, I would say, you drop it into a tool like SEMrush, which you can actually try for 14 days for free by going to thankyouninjas.com. You drop HubSpot into there and it tells you every page that it's ranking for and the kind of search queries that it's appearing for and getting traffic for. A lot of it has no relation to anything, like anything related to the sales platform they sell or the marketing platform they sell. There's stuff about emojis and things like that. Just, okay, you can create content about it. Do you need it? Is that going to be an entry point for someone who's going to sign up for your $10,000 sales CRM? Probably not. There's a limit to how much internet you deserve to have. But I don't think that means you can rule out using AI at all for your content. What do you think about that, Tim?
I would caution people to be, I do think that people should be careful using AI for their content, because, I mean, fundamentally at the moment on its own, it's not really good enough to meet the sort of standards that you should be aiming for. Google's been a bit wishy-washy on the topic of AI content. So last year, initially they said AI content is bad. Then they sort of, I think like Q3, Q4, they rode back on that a bit and said AI content isn't necessarily bad. Now they seem to have just dropped mention of AI altogether. So there was no mention of AI in this update. There's no mention in the quality rater guidelines at all. They talk about scale, content, and automation. So it seems to me like they're just trying to sidestep the whole AI conversation. But I would really caution people to be careful at the moment, because it seems like there are massive shortcuts to content production. And especially when you look around and you see other people doing it. But this is just one of those warnings, right? This is what people thought in 2011 before Penguin, when they found these amazing shortcuts that seem legit to buying massive amounts of backlinks. And it really worked and everyone was doing it. And then everyone got wiped out. So I think it's one of those moments where we've got to look at what's Google's goal. Google's goal is to rank the pages that are the best on those topics. It's very unlikely that the best pages on those topics are just like pure AI output. Yes, they might use AI. The writer or the expert behind it might use AI to brainstorm, but I think you've got to go back to Google's intent and work backwards from there, rather than just say, well, you know, I could publish 5 articles in an hour rather than one if only I just use ChatGPT. I think that's a bad approach at any size and at no matter what market you're in. I think that is a valueless approach, which will, even if it works today, won't work tomorrow. So I say be careful, people. You can never be too clean.
Jess, what are your thoughts on content creation? What would you recommend to anybody listening about how they should go into content creation to keep themselves safe?
I think it's so important to be creating content that your target audience actually wants to read. Like, it used to be create as much as you possibly can in the hopes of getting seen, whereas I am very much of the opinion, and this is the way that the industry is going, that you should be creating content that actually serves your users. Like, you know, like Dale said, yes, HubSpot has these articles about emojis, and obviously that somehow works into their wider marketing strategy, right, in some way, or maybe it used to, and they're just kind of trying to, you know, kind of keep up with that. I don't know if they still do articles like that as much as they once did, but that's not necessarily what you need to do. I think it's best to focus on making really good content that really serves your target customers, rather than just trying to put out as much content as you can. I just don't think that is the way anymore. Yes, if you want to put out content to start seeing what works for you and sort of gauging that, then I think that's good. But then again, you need to sort of, it's not necessarily about how much traffic it gets you. You need to be paying attention to things like how well it's converting, depending on what your conversion goals are and that, you know, the stage of the buyer funnel that content is targeting. But it shouldn't just be, you know, oh, let's put out as many possible things related to our business as we can, because realistically, you're probably going to be spending time to get traffic that doesn't actually convert.
I think it's a real shame that we digital marketers have turned business content into this, like, just bulk text. We just think of content as this, I don't know, this...
Sorry, everyone. Commodity. Apologies.
Yeah, my bad.
Yeah, sorry, we us three are actually responsible for that. No, I'm kidding. Yeah. I'm kidding.
Well, solely responsible.
Because we're like, oh, look at this knowledge base. There's like 1,000 pages in here. And oh, great. Isn't that amazing? Right, go and write a 1,000. But if you think about the value of language in marketing, it's massive. What would Ogilvy think of this mass-produced garbage that's just being published on people's websites in the hope that someone finds it? Content is an opportunity to share your business's expertise or your first-hand experience or your unique insights into the area that you work in. This is an opportunity to sell someone on how amazing your business or your brand is, and to just sub it out for something generic that an AI tool produces, having read the entire internet with no firsthand experience whatsoever on these topics, I think is a real disservice. And it's a shame that we've got to the point where, you know, content is just content. You know, we talk to clients and they're like, wow, you charge a lot to write posts for our website. And it's like, yes, because they're really, really good. And the client might say, well, we can get that same thing for £50 elsewhere or for free elsewhere. Yeah, but it's not the same thing though, is it? Because it's utter garbage. It's never going to produce a single customer because it's just total generic trash. Like, we need higher benchmark for what we're willing to publish on the websites that are designed to represent our businesses than just generic ChatGPT output. It's sad.
Hear, hear. Hear, hear.
Yeah. Definitely, definitely. I think one way to put it as well is like, if you don't, like, it's the equivalent of like, you know, you get a car for free. Okay. Somebody gives you a car for free. It has no engine in it. It has no tires on it. It has nothing. But you got it for free, right? So that means it's infinitely better, or, you know, does the same job as the car that you paid more money for, that's got the things that you needed. It has actually an engine. It has wheels. It gets you from A to B instead of the banger that you brought. That, not that there's anything wrong with cars that are bangers, but I mean, the one that has no engine, no wheels, and just a stationary. That's what you're buying, a stationary car with no wheels and nothing.
Yeah, a woman no brakes.
Yeah.
Which one do you want to take on your clifftop drive?
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Well, I'm going to take us into our third headline, and for this week, it's going to be me. So my heading for this week, or my headline, if you want to say, is slow progress on women leaders. So this comes down to a study that I saw on LinkedIn this past week by Get Hired, which is the LinkedIn news team. And they, you know, correlate stuff and then share around. So, you know, they push conversations and have, you know, people, you know, chatting a bit more. And the point he was trying to make was that even now in 2024, women occupy very few of the top leadership positions. So CEOs, C-suite, directors, those kinds of roles. And it looks like that number's not really increasing. And it was clear that hiring rates are a little bit higher and lower depending on, you know, they go higher or lower some years. You know, the pandemic changed a lot of that when it came to hiring. You know, there were big hiring sprees in some fields. Tech hired a lot of people and then they've all been let go again. So it's been kind of a rough couple of years for women finding those kind of positions. And just reading from some of the data here, so it says that women hold 42% of the jobs globally, so less than half. But when you actually look in the leadership positions, it's much less. It's like less than a third in some cases. So 37% of the leadership roles in Sweden are filled by women. 31% of the leadership positions in Ireland are filled by women, and 23% in Germany. So that's 2 in 10 people in a leadership position are women, which is just absolutely wild. It really surprises me. I think there's a lot more to be done here. And there is a marketing kind of aspect to this I'm going to come to in just a second. So globally, more women are being appointed to senior roles like directors and VPs and C-suite. But it's not quite there yet. There's still like a lot of work to go, which just to come back to it, the workforce, the non-leadership positions, not middle management, just like the people in the people in healthcare, the people in factories and manufacturing and all these different places, you know, areas, different places, they're gradually becoming more occupied by women. However, they're not given the opportunity to go into those advanced roles, into those leadership roles. And I'm really lucky, and we're all really lucky to be exposed into where a large percentage of the people that in our leadership roles are women. So 80% of our senior leadership team are women, 69% of our management team are women, and 67% of our total team are women, which is fantastic. And it's great to kind of set an example of what fantastic marketing can happen when you put, you know, a diverse collection of people into those roles, into an industry, and the marketing industry certainly needs to be more diverse as well. And all of this matters for two reasons. And I come back to that word diversity. Like, a lot of businesses are spending more time focusing on diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging, and that's fantastic, but there's still a long way to go. But the second part that stood out for me was the optics of it all. People buy from people. So when you're looking around for something, whether it's a product or service, you're looking through it and you're going, okay, that influencer looks like me, so I'm going to buy that makeup. Or that speaker at this conference looks like me, so I'm going to listen more. We don't intend to, but it's just a part of who we are and how we are. We look for people we identify with and we're more likely to listen to what they say and buy what they sell. That's the way of things. I think if you're shopping around for something, especially for anybody who's in B2B, I think you may not realize it, but you're looking at the business and thinking, who am I going to be working with? So, for example, if you look at Exposure Ninja and see okay, who's going to be the looking after the marketing for my business? Is, you know, who, what's the makeup of that company? Do they even understand how I work, how my company works? I'm looking for a one-to-one match. I'm looking for an agency that can be my partner and has the same ethics and values and makeup as my business. And if I'm looking, if I'm in a group in a buying committee, you know, I've got my CFO with me and there's a head of sales and we're all deciding which agency to pick or which manufacturer for your new water bottles or whatever it is, you're going to look around the room and see eight Caucasian men. You'll be like, well, okay, maybe this isn't the agency for me. So, or the manufacturer for me or whatever it is. So it's multifaceted, the point I'm trying to make, which is one, we've got a lot more to do in the world, but also within the marketing industry, I suppose, too, to create more opportunities in the C-suite, in leadership positions for women. But also, diversity as part of the makeup of your company and your marketing impacts your marketing and the success of your company. There you go. I thought there was an important point to make because it's just recently been International Women's Day and that study came up around the same time and it kind of caught my attention. Tim, I wonder if you have any thoughts about that.
Yeah, I do actually. I think it's crazy. But I also, obviously seeing that I've only got Exposure Ninja's perspective over the years and we do have a tendency towards more women, not just than average, but more women than men in our organization. And I look at some of our, particularly some of the female leadership and think there's no way we could have grown and done what we've done without the input from those women. And it's almost amazing to me that companies are able to succeed whilst having either accidental or deliberate biases against women, if that's what's happening, given the contribution and given the importance of having a diverse range of perspectives when you're running a company. I spoke to an agency this week about acquisition stuff, and something that the director said, who was a male, gave me the impression that he didn't value the opinions of women as much. And I thought that's a real, I mean, two things about that. Firstly, that's incredibly sad for not just him and the organization, but also for the women that may have applied for jobs over the years or have worked in that organization and not had their voices heard. But secondly, you can improve the performance of that company just by kicking him out and opening up the hiring process and raising up voices of women. Like, that company would be so much better if there was a diverse range of perspectives and, you know, we got to tap into some of the amazing female talent in this country. So I'm almost like, even just from a business perspective, with all of the optics and the DEI stuff, you know, disregarded, if we're trying to build the best businesses that we possibly can or build the best marketing departments we possibly can, I don't understand how we can't make sure that those are environments that are conducive to giving women positions of leadership. It just seems crazy. This is like more than 50% of the population. We're just going to say, right, no. What?
Yeah, absolutely. And just a thought to going back to that Dove campaign and talking about, okay, did they make the right choices, choose the right networks, choose the right message and all that kind of stuff. I'm not saying that they have this particular problem, but just imagine that the creative agency that's handled the campaign, and I'm not saying that they did. Okay, let's just put that caveat in there. But let's say the ad creative part of that campaign was five white guys sitting in New York somewhere who doesn't know anything about how TikTok works, how people use it, the demographics of the people who typically engage with that content. It's wild to think that we're not getting the very best marketing by putting the very best people in there and having a diverse range of perspectives, as you said, Tim. Jess, you have any thoughts on that at all?
Yeah, I do think we do run into this quite common problem where people will be like, well, this is what I think, therefore this is how we do it, whether that's just sort of their lived experience, but maybe you know, let's say we have this team of guys, right, who's trying to do this women's campaign. Well, they might say, well, my mum is like this, my sister is like this, my wife is like this, my kids are like this, without really thinking that actually maybe you're all part of the same class, maybe you all have the same, you know, privileges and stuff. And that's why you all like these things and do these things or behave in this way. But they don't necessarily think about the target audience of either their brand, which sounds ridiculous to think that somebody who owns a brand might not think about their target audience in the right way, but it really is. The amount of marketers that I encounter who are just like, I think I'm going to do this because it's trendy, or you'll go on YouTube and they'll say, you should be running this business because it'll make you money. Those people don't really care about the target audience. They just care that the product will make the money, which is fine. But they literally, like, the thing that sets apart the good businesses is they actually think about their target audience and whatnot. Yeah. So I suppose I'm sort of landing back into a target audience place rather than a diversity place. What I'm trying to say is that people will, you know, make really closed off decisions based on their own experience, and not necessarily, they can't even fathom that somebody might have a different experience to them. And then that can lead to just wider problems overall, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think there's a lot from that story, but I'm going to pick for this week the story that we turn into tasks. The one I think is going to be most interesting to our listeners, and it's going to impact them a lot. It's probably that last story, but I'm going to pick the algorithm one from Tim, because I think there's a lot of more immediately actionable stuff from it today. Whereas the last story, I think, is for everyone to work on for the rest of the year and for always. So, Tim, I'm going to come to you just a second. Jess, I would first like to ask you, what tasks do you think marketing managers can take from Tim's story about the algorithm update?
Yeah, this is it's slightly less of a task, but more of a problem you might encounter that you just need to sort of be ready to counteract. So I think we're going to see situations where senior leadership are hearing things like, oh, these websites are just generating AI content. It's cheap and easy and it's free. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, and you're going to start becoming under pressure to put out more work, because why can't you do that? Because you have AI. And it makes it so much easier. And, you know, you can do double the work you do now. And I think you just really need to be ready to combat that and have those conversations. Say, yes, okay, I can generate 20 articles a week for you, but they're not going to do anything. But my time's going to be spent on them that I could be spending writing one really fantastic article, or having my team write one really fantastic article. So I think, yeah, just be prepared to field those questions from people, almost like what we were just talking about then, people who think they know best based on current trends or things that they've heard, but actually don't understand what that looks like when it's being put into practice.
That's great. I love that suggestion. Tim, what tasks can business owners take from your story this week?
Oh, I'm gonna steal Jess's and apply it in a wider context. Like, anytime AI is presented as a shortcut, you've got to be really careful, because this is a prime example of, you know, just because you can does it necessarily mean that you should? The reason that, like, pure AI generated content is being sort of demoted or penalized in the Google results is because actually it doesn't come from a place of expertise. It doesn't come from a place of experience. And there are sort of wider implications there. Like, if we're having ChatGPT produce our onboarding guides or our training materials and things like this, we've got to be so careful. It looks legit. It looks like high expertise content, but actually it's not. It's just doing a really good impression of that type of thing. So I think there's a sort of wider lesson here about the value of AI generated content in all sorts of formats, but definitely don't put pressure on your marketing teams to shortcut or, you know, whatever, reduce costs, improve efficiency with generative AI, unless there is a real bulletproof, future-proof, solid business case for it.
That's a superb suggestion. I'm going to give business owners, marketing managers, marketing directors, VPs of marketing, and all of you wonderful people who enjoy marketing one more task you get to do today. And that's to go to exposureninjas.com/review, and you can request a free website and marketing review and then have a look at your website and see how many opportunities there are to improve your ranking, your traffic, your lead generation, your sales. So that's exposureninjas.com/review. Okay, well, we're going to hop over into doing some quickfire questions, but the questions are for me. So
I'm going to ask them. They are indeed. They are indeed for you. Would you like me to read them out to you, Dale?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Rather than you reading them out to yourself in a silly boy. Yeah, you could do that. That could be entertaining, but you never know. So, Dale, now you're in the hot seat. Are you like sweating? Are you stressed? Are you nervous?
A little bit.
A little bit nervous. Cool. Maybe you're going to be like, oh no, these questions are actually really difficult. No, I'm kidding.
Let's change them. I'm never doing these questions again. I feel sorry for everyone who's ever had to answer them.
Oh dear. So Dale, if you had just 1 hour to improve your marketing, what would it be that you would work on?
I would work on a one pager. So I would get together all of my information about brand message, target market, the buyer personas, the buyer committee, who's involved in deciding how that money gets spent. I'd do like a brief funnel plan and just figure out a strategy and tactics to make it all happen. So it's just one place where it's all crystal clear that everybody that's working on the marketing knows what they're doing and who they're trying to reach.
I like that. I think that would also show you where you had any gaps, which could be very, very handy. Okay, next up, what would you do with an infinite marketing budget? Jeez. Maybe the questions are hard to ask, not that they're hard to answer.
They are. What would I do with an infinite marketing budget? I would hire the best subject matter expert, content creation, influencer team you've ever seen, and I would just give them as much resource as they need to create content, but also reach out and find the people that create the content that is elsewhere in your funnel. So, you know, influencers, reviewers, all those kind of people, whether it's product or service, there's people out there you can reach that are being checked out with, whether that's Wirecutter over on the New York Times website. People are writing about you or your products or your services. Make sure there are people out there filling those gaps and convincing people. Well, maybe not convinced, but letting them know that your product and service is the best.
I like that. Which marketing skill would you recommend 18-year-old Dale works on and why?
Copywriting. I think before you create anything, whether it's a video, a podcast, or a PPC ad, images, presentation, it all comes back to one thing, and that's words. So if you can write words really, really well, you can then turn those words into a fantastic video script or a fantastic podcast episode or a fantastic book or a fantastic lots of things. So I'd learn that skill incredibly well, and then everything else would be a lot easier.
Nice. What are you most excited about in marketing right now? And is it AI?
It's not AI at the moment. It is a little bit, but it's mostly like demand generation or specifically revenue marketing. So looking at how the entire marketing funnel pre-sales conversion influences the impact for the business in terms of revenue generation. So what can the marketing team do to influence the eventual conversion into a sale? And if you can work on like post-sale too, to get people coming back around is a fantastic thing. So yeah, demand generation to get people super hot and interested in your business. They don't want to pick anyone else, but revenue marketing to kind of get them coming back for more and more and more.
I like that. I really like demand gen. It's really cool. Last but not least, who should we invite on to be our next podcast guest? Who are you thinking?
I'm really undernard over this one because there's a lot of people I'd love to bring on, but I'd actually like to invite Joe Glover of the Marketing Meetup on because Joe's put together a fantastic community that is in the UK and they do meetups and stuff in person, which I've enjoyed going to here in Edinburgh. But they have a lot of like weekly webinars and chats, and it's a lot of people that go to it, and it's just free. It's just a really giving marketing community where Joe and the guests just help other marketers to be better marketers. And that's a wonderful thing to do. So I'd love to have Joe come on and tell us about the wonderful stories he's heard as a consequence of that community being created and how he's built it and put it together.
Nice. Awesome. Thanks for answering those today, Dale. I'm glad you enjoyed being in the hot seat. Your answer's really fab.
It's scary. Super. Well, thank you everyone for joining us for the latest episode of the podcast. We'll be back next week. If you have enjoyed this week's episode, do hop over to your favorite podcast app and leave us a review telling us what you liked or didn't. That's absolutely fine. And you can even make suggestions on what we talk about in the future or a guest you would like us to invite on as well. So do hop over to Apple iTunes or our Apple Podcasts and whatever it's called nowadays. Spotify is a great one too. Or you can also hop over to YouTube where you can catch all of our previous Dojo episodes. And if you want to catch every episode of the podcast we've ever done, and there are 300 plus, go to exposureninja.com/podcast. Thanks everyone, and see you next week.